I would say the key issues that surfaced over this week, number one, of course, war and peace and the ongoing war in the Middle East, in the Ukraine, Africa, and some anxieties even out in the Pacific. That's one area of concern. The other area of concern that unfolded over the week, of course, was tariffs, export controls, the impact on global economy, and that remains background anxiety as well. And the other thing which the UN, of course, is concerned with is this is the 80th anniversary of the UN. Everyone knows reform is needed, but this is also occurring at a particularly delicate and difficult time. And the question is whether there'll be enough support for the UN to reform and whether the UN will be able to deal with issues related to war and peace, development, sustainable development, and management of the global commons, including pandemics, climate change. The other event that I participated in was to address the Security Council on AI, both to deal with the potential, the opportunities that the artificial intelligence revolution presents, as well as the challenges, particularly where it impacts on war and peace. On war, the question of lethal autonomous weapons. At the strategic level, the impact of AI on diplomacy and deterrence, and how this will probably rewrite a lot of the fundamental presumptions that have undergirded the way diplomacy is conducted, the way deterrence is enforced. So all in all, it's been a very hectic, very wide-ranging set of issues, but it was useful for Singapore to be represented, to be heard, and to renew our friendships, which I've had over the years, make new partnerships. A few formal agreements were signed, for bilateral consultations with countries like Kenya, El Salvador. And surprisingly, we actually formally established diplomatic ties with Monaco, a state which we have actually had de facto relations for a very long time, but we both discovered that we hadn't formally established diplomatic ties. So we got that done with the Foreign Minister of Monaco and witnessed by Prince His Serene Highness, Prince Albert.
Key takeaways from the discussions at the UNGA this year, and in your view, what role does Singapore actually play in influencing or even contributing to regional and global geopolitical affairs?
Well, as I said first, the three big clusters of issues at the UN: war and peace, economic development, sustainable development, and global commons, climate change, pandemics, and how to deal with AI. Those were the themes that were on the table this year. Particularly for Singapore, I would say we are a small state, but we have been present, we have been constructive, we have been a bridge builder, we have been sometimes a coordinator. And in my speech, I outline that even in this time when there's deep anxiety about ability to achieve consensus, ability for the UN to be effective, ability for decisions to be made, there was actually some pieces of good news. So, for instance, earlier this week, for the BBNJ Treaty, the High Seas Treaty, which you will recall was presided by Ambassador Rena Lee of Singapore, earlier this week we went past the 60 ratification threshold needed to bring that into effect. So it'll come into effect in January next year. Another example, the open-ended working group on cybersecurity, which was chaired for 5 years by our permanent representative to the UN, Mr. Berhan Ghaffour. And you can imagine on such a sensitive topic, to achieve consensus agreement involving the United States, Russia, China, and in fact the entire UN body, it shows that multilateralism is still alive. People recognize that despite all the tensions, there are issues which are best dealt with in a multilateral consensual way, and Singapore was able to help bring about that consensus. I also highlighted the example in the World Intellectual Property Organization, two treaties, one on the Riyadh Design Treaty and the other one on IP related to genetic and traditional knowledge. Again, you know, to my pleasant surprise, consensus was achieved, treaties were made, and again it helped that I think we had a very competent Singaporean in charge of WIPO, Mr. Darren Tang. So, you know, we may be small, but we're able to make a contribution. The main point which I was trying to put across is that small states like Singapore, or even medium powers, still have agency, still have strategic options, and the need for us to lean in to support one another and to keep multilateral processes and that mindset alive and well. And I would say, so it's a combination of anxiety for the state of the world, but still a sense that small countries collectively can make a difference.
The Singapore yes. government has long warned about fracturing global order, and this was quite clearly on display on this year's UNGA. What does this signal about the current dynamics between major powers, not just between US and China, but also between US and its traditional European allies? Thank you.
Well, first I would say the UN is still the only organization in which you get 193 countries all represented. America, President Trump was here, made a speech. Not everyone will agree with everything he said, but nevertheless, he was present. From China, Premier Li Qiang was here. He made a speech to the General Assembly as well. Sergei Lavrov from Russia was here. And, of course, the Europeans, Africans, South America, everyone was present. So, yes, there are issues, yes, there are tensions, yes, there are disagreements, but the fact is this is still the only forum where everybody is present. And if there's sufficient goodwill and maturity, in fact, some very good conversations can be had, even on very difficult issues. So I would say there is a risk of fracture, but the UN is still the only game in town. And it's our duty to lean in and to help this process of engagement. So I don't leave here. You know, I leave here with a realistic sense of anxiety, but with optimism that multilateralism is still alive and well.
So you often said that small states like Singapore, the international rule-based order is an existential necessity.
Yes.
But in today's warfare and multipolar world, the order is under strain and unpredictability is rising.
Yes, so that's true.
So in this backdrop, what is Singapore's main message in its national statement at this year's UNGA, and how do you hope it will resonate with both the global community and Singaporeans? Thank you.
Well, if you look at the statement that I just delivered, the first point of reflection was that, in fact, the past 80 years, after the Second World War, certainly for states like Singapore, who achieved the domestic prerequisite of national identity, national cohesion, good governance, hardworking, disciplined people. In fact, the last 80 years was a time of opportunity. It was a time when, well, first, there was no world war. In the last 80 years, there was no nuclear holocaust because of mutually assured destruction. Yes, there were proxy wars, but if you reflect on Singapore's journey, and not just Singapore, but many other small states, this 60 to 80 years was a time of opportunity. You saw independence, economic development, prosperity, global supply chains, the dissemination of technology, ideas, and IP. So that's the first point. Actually, on balance, it was a unique and productive and constructive phase of human history. Quite different from the first half of the 20th century, when two world wars, tens of millions of lives lost. Next point, however, is that this phase, that old world order, is over. And it's over for a variety of reasons, and you know, the superpower that underwrote this world order has taken a narrower, more transactional view of things. It feels that the world order that it underwrote perhaps didn't compensate it as well as it anticipated. It was worried about others who were free riding or taking advantage of it. Be that as it may, the fact is the underwriter-in-chief has decided that it's not business as usual. Second factor why the world order ended is that you now have a new superpower, China, which has risen especially since 1978, the reform and opening by Deng Xiaoping. And that sharper superpower contestation does make it more difficult for consensus to be achieved at the UN, does make it more difficult for multilateralism to work, and does make it more difficult for a collective and effective response to issues affecting the global commons. By that, I mean climate change, pandemics, and in future, AI. There is anxiety about effectivity of the UN, and the other point I made is if you look at the UN and you look at the Security Council, actually it's still an edifice that reflects the realities of 1945. But 80 years later, the distribution of power, the distribution of technology, the distribution of influence is very different from 1945. Yet there has been difficulty in reforming the UN to make it more representative, to make it fit for purpose. The point is that this is work in progress. So I was making the point that, however, the UN is still the only game in town. Multilateralism and rules-based multilateralism is still essential, especially so for small states, and that we mustn't lose hope, and we must still insist on our own agency and our own autonomy and work together. And I would say, as far as the UN body is, membership is concerned, I would say there's still a healthy majority that believes in rules-based multilateralism, that believes the UN, a properly reformed UN, can deliver the public goods needed to protect the global commons and to maintain peace and to provide hope for economic development. So that's my take on it.
Hong Kong has identified climate action as one of its domestic and international priorities. But what can Singapore do in the face of such strong skepticism as shown by President Trump during his speech earlier this week? In your own speech, you said no single country can resolve issues such as climate change or pandemics. Is Singapore's role in this to help convince, or are we limited to the partners who do agree with us?
I would say both. Let me deal first with President Trump clearly is not convinced that man-made activities are causing climate change. I think he made that very clear. But yet, if you also listen to his speech carefully, he talked about atmospheric and marine pollution and the transboundary effects of that. My takeaway is that America, even under current administration, does understand that there is a global commons and that from time to time, depending on the modality, the global commons can come under threat. My response to this is to try to persuade everyone, let's look at the evidence objectively. So for instance, if the carbon dioxide levels in the world today is at unprecedented levels, you probably have to go back a couple of 100 million years the last time the world had carbon dioxide at this level. For small, low-lying states, those in the Pacific and the Caribbean, for them, climate change is an observed reality. Sea level rises, coral bleaching, their anxieties about preserving their sovereignty and their maritime entitlements. Again, the point is, let's follow the science, look at the data, look at the evidence. But I am, I was cheered that he acknowledged transboundary impact and the fact that we do need to work together. So it's a combination of, keeping everybody focused on the science, reminding everyone that no one country, even no single superpower, can solve all these problems on its own. And then coming up with realistic suggestions and finding mechanisms in which we can work together. So I remain a guarded optimist for multilateralism and protection of the global commons.
You made a few suggestions for UN reform in your speech.
Yes.
My question is that if the UN continues to weaken, what are the implications for small states like Singapore? Thank you.
No, a weakened or dysfunctional UN is very bad for small states. Small states need international law. We need to be present at fora where our voices are heard. We need to be able to make common cause. Problems in the global commons, climate change, pandemics, AI gone wrong, will in fact disproportionately impact small states, more so than larger powers. So we can't afford to let the UN go down. But we are realistic that the UN does need reform. And my appeal to everyone was to lean in and to help the leadership in the UN, and that this is a collective responsibility to improve the organization, make it fit for purpose. But the common thread through all this is working together. The other point, especially for small states, is compliance with international law. Now, the other issue, which obviously had significant traction here, was what's happening in the Middle East. And if you think about that, that's an old conflict, but it's a terrible tragedy with immense human suffering. We hope that in the next few days, a ceasefire can come about. In my discussions with my Arab friends and even with Israelis, I know that there is a series of critical meetings happening in the next few days. If we all pray and hope that good sense prevails, if we can get an immediate ceasefire, an immediate release of hostages, an immediate surge of humanitarian assistance, at least on a human level, we can reduce the suffering. The longer term issues will always be very difficult. But, all wars stop at some point. It usually ends at the negotiating table. It breaks our heart that so much blood is lost whilst waiting for an ultimate solution at the negotiating table. And the other point is international law. So in our interactions, as I told you, I with a Palestinian delegation, with my Arab friends, and with the Israelis, I made it very clear that Singapore will go by international law. And, it has to be handled that way. Because if one side is going to insist that might is right, and the outcome must be based on military might, in the long run, that's not how you get a solution that everyone will accept. It's not the solution that will will work for the long term, and a world in which might is right, in the long run, is inimical to small states. So it was a good opportunity for us to explain Singapore's position on all this, and I can say there was understanding. Doesn't mean everyone agrees with the stance that we have taken, but there was understanding, there's appreciation of our perspective. And the main point is that they know Singapore is focused on being pragmatic, constructive, helpful, building bridges, bringing parties together, even when, at first they start off either in a state of conflict or from positions which are very, very different. So, to sum up, the world's not short of problems, but there's still only one UN. There is still an absolute need for multilateralism. There is still a need for international law. And small states like Singapore, collectively with our partners, we can make a difference. And so we have to keep plugging away.